I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
If you didn't know him for the first time and you see this kid sitting in the corner of like flicking matches, you'd think he's a pretty strange dude anyway. But I mean, that's just Ian. And I think we all got very used to a lot of the stuff that in retrospect maybe were signals of a more extreme mental issue. Being an artist and being in a band is so tough. And you've got to deal with some real pressures.
You couldn't help but be excited to be part of it. You know, they were tiny when we signed them.
So now imagine that scenario. But me and Ian Miles are in Hollywood, actual Hollywood, which is the hilarious kind of bumper sticker of everyone who's ever sold out.
I live just off of Hollywood Boulevard and walked around the corner with my wife to go to the Mexican food place and bumped into Will and Ian on Hollywood Boulevard.
He was carrying all of the guilt of Ian. He blamed himself for everything that happened to Ian.
And at that point, I was like, what the fuck is going on, dudes? Like, yeah, I didn't end up going back.
It's just hard to know, isn't it? It's just hard. It's just like a... Because it's hard to know what you'd want if you were in that situation, isn't it? I was trying to keep the show together.
Me and Will went to a place called the Magic Castle. You might have seen it on the show Us, but it's you can only go there by invite. It's up on a hill here in Hollywood. There's no photos allowed in there, and it is just this building full of magicians and wonder, right? It was an incredible night. We really had a brilliant laugh. And we went out so that he could have a cigarette. And it was the closest I saw to the dam burst with him, with all the pressure that he had going on. And that afternoon, he'd written All My Friends that ends the record on a piano, and he played it to me on an iPhone. I ordinarily insist upon, like, nope, I don't want to hear it until it's finished. Like, I don't want to have any input. This is your work, all the rest of it. But he was so... I wouldn't... Maybe struggling. You could tell something was definitely up. And he played me the song As You Hear It on the record, written that afternoon. And I think it's one of the most poignant moments I've had in my life in music. Because the song's wonderful. They're two people that I've got so much love for. And it's as real as real gets, that song, and that moment was part of it. So it did get heavy.
You know, there's one song in particular that really just tears me up every time I hear it, and it's All My Friends. And it's funny, it's a song that Will wrote, you know, probably in about 45 minutes. You know, he was just sort of out in the live room. We've got this old beat up upright piano out there. And he was just kind of playing along on it. And, you know, he's like, you know, I don't know. I don't know if we should put this on the record. And I just looked at him and I said, are you out of your fucking mind? This song is incredible. This is so good. I mean, that's what I love about Will as a lyricist is that, you know, he'll just flow. And it comes quickly and it comes in bursts. And you have to be willing to capture it. A lot of times, you know, with the vocals on the record, you know, some of the takes that are the final takes are some of the early takes, you know, fresh off Will having written it. Okay, this sounds cool, man. Let's record it. There's a certain, you know, energy and vibe you get when it's fresh and it's, you know, the song has just entered the room and you've met it for the first time and it's time to capture it, take its photo, you know, get a picture. But Will, yeah, I mean, he's great. And he's very courageous writer because he's willing to laugh at himself. He's very flexible, you know, he's not, I think that's a good trait for a songwriter is you've got to be really passionate about what you're doing. But you also have to be flexible. You know, you have to be willing to say, all right, you know what? It's not as good as I thought it was on second thought. You also have to be willing to just put something really personal in there. I mean, just really expose yourself as a human being and be all right with that. You know, that's something else he's good at. But yeah, he's brilliant, man. He's just such a great, great writer. Really fun to work with.
He kept writing ballads, but he didn't want ballads. But it was just all that kept coming out every time he got into the studio. And he knew that there's a certain punk rock energy in Creeper. And it's in its roots and its core DNA. And he needed that. And he knew the fans needed that and the record needed it. So he was the one getting frustrated about all of the ballads, but he was the one writing them. So we kind of hit an impasse, and every night we'd talk about it, and I'd be like, that song was great. And it was like, but it's a ballad. I was like, well, stop writing fucking ballads then. I mean, to me, it seemed like a pretty easy solution. But I think he was struggling to find that hook, that foundation to kind of jump off and kind of take the rock sound, the heavier sound of Creeper into a new place. And yeah, and Si and I definitely felt like that.
My relationship was falling apart. It had fallen apart for a while. I just didn't want to be there at all. I didn't want to be there at all. I wanted to be anywhere but there. And I loved hanging out with Zandy. And he was amazing. He was so zen. He'd chill me out. But I just felt really hopeless. And I was really drifting. And my home life was a disaster. And so it became a really difficult thing to do. There was just times when I would go into the studio and I would sit down for the day at like, it would be a late start. It would be like a 10 a.m. start and I'd sit there and I would be shaking while I sat there and they'd let me go home like at 10 a.m. They'd go, you're not able to work today. And it was costing a fortune for me to be there. My best friend wasn't there, who would have been able to sort that in an instant. He would have picked a guitar up and had started to write and would have covered me. And my personal life was in a complete state of disrepair. It was a complete disaster. I was under a lot of pressure and I almost completely broke. It was a very difficult thing. And so that happened a few times where I'd have to go home. Truth is, it was no one's fault but mine. My relationship was in a massive mess. I was very, very, very unhappy. After my mum's partner had died, it made me reflect on a few things. And I was extremely unhappy. I was very, very, very unhappy. I was in a corner. I was in a real corner. And Ian wasn't there as he had been the times before to kind of say the right thing and kind of be there as a friend. And it wasn't his fault. But I was kind of on my own. I kind of had my safety net taken away from me. And I couldn't function anymore. you know, like, I'm not like a bad person, but I felt like a bad person every day. I felt like a really, really awful person every day. And so how do you sit down to try and start to write when you feel like that every day? How do you start writing songs? Like, it was impossible. I didn't even have the first chord because Ian wasn't there to play it. It was cyanide, I think. I think it was cyanide. I was trying to suppress how I felt for somebody else. And it was one morning in Los Angeles where my manager happened to be over. And he walked me with me to get some breakfast to a place called Waffle. But it's off Sunset, opposite where Amoeba Music used to be. And I sat there with him, very frustrated. And he's an angel. My manager has been a godsend to me. He's like one of the most important people in my life. His name is Ian Dickinson. And I sat there across from him and I said, Ian, I can't write anything. I can't do anything. I don't know what to do. Took his knife and fork and started eating his food. And I took a sip of my coffee, and I would drink black coffee every morning. And it was almost like magic. Out of nowhere, T-Rex came on. And I remember putting my coffee down immediately and saying to him, dude, this is Creeper. Creeper is a British glam rock band. That's what we've always been. And he looked at me in the eye and he went, then go and fucking do it then. And I'd never forget that.
To me, and I think to the others close to the record, we'd been impressed with the quality kind of almost from the get-go. I mean, it was really exciting. It was Creeper 2.0, the Creeper where I always imagined that they could go, and they were going there, and that was really exciting. But I don't think Will had really nailed what it was he was trying to achieve yet, and I think that was the changing point. I think with Cyanide and then Annabelle and then Napalm Girls and Be My End, where he found this balance of taking all of the DNA of Creeper and Creeper from the beginning, all the dark romance and everything, but spinning it in a new way and referencing things that just aren't widely referenced. I mean, whether it's like Roy Orbison, Proto Men, Suede, putting this all together, he's pulling from all these places that most people aren't, and obviously putting his own very unique twist on it.
Just be this constant flow of tracks coming backwards and forwards, which was really fantastic, really great writing process and some amazing stuff. And then we get Cyanide, and it's something completely different for Creeper, but it kind of almost was perfect Creeper at the same time, because it's so theatrical and it has some amazing influences. You know, there's definitely some Bowie in there and Beatles, things like that. But then you just hear that chorus, and the minute you hear that chorus, it's just like, wow, it just takes you to that other place. It's so big. And just remember getting through, and then as you went through the next couple of days, anyone that came into the office just saying, hey, you got to hear this track, it's so amazing. And it wasn't finished even. It was pretty far along on what they'd done. But it just felt straight away they've written this really, really amazing tune. And it was a great track to really, I guess, frame the rest of the album around. I think that's what made the most sense about it, because it told, it kind of moved Creeper into having that real artistic side outside of the punk stuff that they've been doing before, but still had that huge chorus which everyone knows them for. So I think it really connects two parts of the album for me.
It was amazing because that getting out there and doing that session that Cyanide was recorded in, and actually my favorite song on the record is Paradise, and that was written and recorded were written, sorry, during that same cyanide session. And to think that session almost didn't happen because obviously Ian being hospitalized and Will's mum losing her fiance literally days before he was about to get on the plane. The songs never would have happened. And I mean, when we got the track back in January, it was early January, I remember, because it was super grey and I had it on in my car driving for a wedding. And I just had it on repeat. I think I needed as much reassurance as anyone at that time. I just kept telling to my wife and I kept saying, I was like, this is fucking great, isn't it? I mean, I really love this. This is really special. And everyone at the label started getting really excited about Cyanide, and anyone who kind of came in contact with it did. And yeah, it felt like a real moment. I think everybody needed it. I think everybody needed to remember that there was something really exciting happening here, and Cyanide was, it came at just the right time. I think we all needed it to keep everybody going.
Will had been there on his own for, I think it was like 3 weeks. When I got there, I just remember Will being like, thank God you're here, because it's been really hard, like, being here on my own. It was a funny time. Like, Will was going through his own personal battles, and I was to some extent. So my mum has had cancer twice, and like, she's all right now, but for me, I've always been very good at compartmentalizing my feelings, which isn't always the best option, because they kind of start creeping out of the box eventually. And to see Will in the position that he was in with what he was going through, we both really opened up to each other. There was this swinging seat outside the studio under these trees, and I'd given up smoking at this point, but Will would always be out there like chain smoking cigarettes and drinking scotch. And I was there drinking scotch, trying to resist chain smoking cigarettes. For me, just to look back on everything that I have been through in the last few years, everything that my mum has been through in the last few years. And it was just a bit of a personal reflection on what I've been through and come out of. It was quite an emotional time, but I really miss it. Like, I feel very nostalgic for the time that we spent there. Will and I were a few scotches deep. We were in the studio at Wax, and we did that chorus and the God Can't Save Us and Let's Live Like Sinners. And the top bit, the really high Let's Live Like Sinners, it's me and Will and Redder, who is a producer at Wax, and that nearly killed me, like, singing that bit. But when I listened to it, I'm like, yes, like, I put everything into that. I actually got really sick from that. I was coming down with the flu and jet lag, and I didn't actually blow my voice out, but, like, that was enough for my... I was so tired, my body was like, oh, my goodness. But when I listened back to it, I'm like, I put everything into that, and I can hear it, and I love listening to that song because it just reminds me of that, like, how much I gave to that song.
By the end of the process, the writing process, for the record in general, trying a bunch of stuff that didn't pan out or didn't feel right for now, obviously going through everything that Will was going on in his personal life, everything with Ian, and then just those kind of long months being in LA. I mean, by the time he came back from that final trip, I mean, he was just done. He was exhausted. And thankfully, it kind of coincided with the return of Ian Miles. I mean, Ian was still in recovery, but was in a great place. Maybe when I think back now, probably the best place I've ever actually known him, because I guess he'd been getting the help that he needed. And there was still so much tracking that had to be done. And all of the little things needed to be done. And Ian just stepped in and he took control of it. And, he put in some amazing shifts in London. I mean, he was in a travel lodge just by the studio, and he would be the constant. So Ian was the one there. So Ian would go in at weeks at a time, and the guys would come in and do their part with Ian, and he held it all together. He held it all together at a time where I think Will needed to go away, and Will needed to focus on himself for a minute, as well as for Will. I mean, the job just never stops. So for Will, he's then having to think about videos and artwork and everything else. And during that time, Ian just, it was amazing. I mean, to go from where he had been in such a short period of time to then overseeing this huge and complex record in London. And I mean, he jumped at it, and it was amazing. It was really amazing to see.
Hospital for me was a break. Like, it was a forced break, granted, but it was still a break. And Will needed a break. So he kind of handed the reins over to me, and he was like, hey, dude, please, like, just do the record, like, do what you need to do. Because they had the demos recorded in LA, and some of the demos ended up being, like, the full versions of songs on the record. But we needed to obviously get the band recording on the record, because at that point it was just me and Zandy and Will on the record. So yeah, that was the beginning of the London sessions. So Will had some rest time. I took over, and I had to organize these sessions in London with this guy called Rich, who was like, he was so sweet and he was so talented. Like, he won an award for working on a Radiohead record. I've forgotten the name of the award. But yeah, it was, the dude was great. I loved him. I loved working with him. And I was like, the way we worked it was, I would go and stay in London. We would have like 2 weeks here, 3 weeks here, 2 weeks here. I would stay there the whole time, and we would rotate who else in the band was going to come. So I'd like have 3 days with Ollie where we'd work through guitar, 3 days with Sean where we do bass, 3 days with Hannah where we go through like backing vocals and keys. And that, like, for me, that I was talking to Kat about this earlier on. I have really, really fond memories of that. Like, that was more of a break for me than Hospital was, because I was staying up in London. Like, I had my best friends coming in to record music with me on rotation, so I got to hang out with them all the time. Like, I was going out and eating out every night, like having pizza, like having burgers, having like all this nice food. And just like getting time to myself to wander around London, you know, like sometimes you just need to walk around and like take it in, like the atmosphere of the city and like the people and the lights and the sounds. Like, I was locked back into the record, and we were all doing it together at that point. There was a real sense of unison at that point. And that felt really, really nice. Like, things were finally coming back together. In hindsight, me and Will talk about this all the time. We fully believe that this record is cursed. Like, the Sex, Death, and the Infinite Void curse. Like, that's what we call it, the Creeper curse. So much stuff happened whilst... I know, granted, it was a long period of time, but so much horrible stuff happened whilst it was going on. To come out of a situation like that, where all that chaos happened, and to have a product like this, despite the challenges, despite all of the challenges, to be finished with this one complete piece of art that tells that story in a narrative fashion and sonically, it's a beautiful thing. Like, honestly, it's a beautiful thing. And it's nice, kind of occasionally hard to listen to, but rewarding, because I can hear where I was, I can hear where Will was, and I can look back on that objectively and think, wow, like, we have come so far since that point. Like, everything crumbled, absolutely everything crumbled, to the point where Creeper wasn't going to be a thing, just because so much stuff was happening. And then out of the rubble comes this record, and I'm so proud of it. And it's really, really reflects everything that was happening, but in a positive light. And like I said, occasionally it takes me back to like a point where things were tough, but it also reminds me of how far we've come and like how positive everything is now. And how we're all unified again and like, oh God, it just feels so good right now.
I mean, we wouldn't be where we are now without Zandy Barry, without a shadow of a doubt.
I think if you're gonna have good art, if you're gonna have good music, if you're gonna call it as such, there has to be just a throbbing sense of humanity in it, you know? And these songs are that way. I think they're, you know, there's a lot of different interesting songs. I think they're about, you know, kind of smashing through barriers, dealing with the limitations that you find yourself placed in, the constraints. The human spirit does not like to be, as the world is finding now, quarantined. You know, it doesn't like to be cooped up. It's very difficult to ask that of human beings. And I think, you know, those guys, I mean, the whole band, you know, they really live the life. They walk the walk. You know, there's really no daylight between them as human beings and the conviction in their music. We had a few people around the studio that were very much a part of the record. You know, Walla Gagel, my partner, he mixed a couple things on the album at Wax. Retta, you know, our trusty engineer, producer, he was a big part of the record. Mackenzie, she handles a lot of our stuff at Wax. And everyone had the same agreement, you know. It's just like, this is incredible. There's a lot of songs on the album that really make you feel that way. They just take you to this super extreme emotional place. And it's just, it's exhilarating. It's a world to dive yourself into. And we just had a lot of talented people around to help out. You know, I did a lot of the orchestrations with my good friend, Tim Williams. He's a incredible film composer that's done, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, whatnot. He's a good friend. But there was just this infectious, like, hey, I'm working on this record. This is totally insane. You want to work on it with me? And people would be like, yeah, let's do something, you know? So it's totally contagious. For me, I just sort of came to the conclusion with the band. It's like, look, if we're going to do this, we're going straight to the moon, or we're leaving a massive burning crater in the earth. There are no stops that have not been pulled out to make this thing just an epic, awesome landscape of just incredible music. You know, just the sounds, the songs. Will, I think, as a singer, you know, I think he pushed himself, or allowed himself to be pushed, or found himself, you know, in places he had never even gone before. I think that's true of everyone in the band, and certainly myself. I mean, I really tried to push the creative limits of what was possible. And so I am just so excited about this album when we got it done. I mean, it's just, it's one of those records that you're going to keep listening back to, and it's never going to sound dated. It's just so fresh. It's so brilliant, you know, and those guys really deserve the credit for, as artists, just taking it there, you know, and not all artists can do that. And Creeper did. I think in one of the Star Wars movies, one of the recent ones, there's a moment where they take C-3PO apart and his wires are just kind of everywhere. And it's like, oh God, they're never going to get him back together. That's sort of how this record was. I mean, we had so much of it recorded in different places at different times. And at a certain point, because of the budget sort of running out, I mean, you got to remember, this album was designed to, I mean, it, you know, it's designed to bankrupt record labels, to put studios out of business, to drive people to the end of their sanity and completely lose it, and possibly, you know, just not be able to, you know, go produce records again. I mean, there were so many parts that had to be sort of assembled. We had orchestrations going on all around the planet. And I mean, there was just all these pieces. So, I mean, there is definitely a place. I think over Christmas break, I was working on some string arrangements, and you know, and just kind of losing my mind a bit, and being okay with that, because I knew that the complexity of it all just was worth it, and we had to get it done. We had to get it done. It just had to come out. It had to be. We had to finish this incredible, crazy thing.
Me and Will talk about it all the time, and I just think it's crazy when you've got, I mean, obviously every Creeper record is written with a narrative in mind, but actually this one has a real life narrative that just as fucking crazy, if not crazier than the story. So now I've survived it, it's a lot of fun, and I look back at it all and smile, but yeah, it was crazy. Sometimes, like, when you spent a long time and you've been through a lot trying to make a record, I mean, making most records isn't easy anyway. I mean, there's always something. There'll be time issues, budget issues, creative issues, labels, bands butting heads, whatever it is. It's never straightforward. Even the easy ones aren't easy. And I mean, sometimes after you've spent a long time making a record, you find that you don't necessarily want to revisit that very quickly. But the weirdest thing for me is I've wanted to listen to this album the entire time. I mean, I listened to it nonstop, and I have done since the second I got it. And I mean, to me, that says a lot about the record itself.
This is a record about falling in love with someone you shouldn't. This is a record about working out who you really are. This is a record about friendship. This is a record about keeping going despite everything else in the world telling you to stop. This is a record about persistence. This is a record about teamwork. This is a record about not being a good collaborator. This is a record about being a good collaborator. This is a record about the last 5 years of my life. This is Sex, Death, and the Infinite Void.
This is a Mighty Moon Media podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.